Cale Clark here. Thanks for listening to my podcast. Check out Charity Mobile and prayerfully consider making them your wireless carrier. Mention offer code Relevant Radio and get a free phone. Don't delay. CharityMobile.com. That's CharityMobile.com.
Fascinating facts, candid conversations, and some levity to lighten your day. This is the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio.
Fantastic Friday to all of you. We made it through another week. So happy to be kicking off the weekend with you on the Cale Clark Show. 888-914-9149 is the toll-free line to call to talk to me for free. 888-914-9149. You can also email the show, K-L-C-A-L-E at relevantradio.com. And follow me on Twitter, at Cale Clark, C-A-L-E, Clark with an E. And the show account is at Cale Clark Show. Well, yesterday we talked about how mathematics can help to prove the existence of God, that God is truth. He's not just love, he's also truth. And today's saint is Saint Bonaventure. It's his feast day today. And I must confess, I don't know too much about the life of Saint Bonaventure. I should really try to remedy that. Maybe some of you guys out there are Saint Bonaventure experts and aficionados. If so, maybe you can enlighten me a little bit. Maybe you went to St. Bonaventure's, one of the Bonnies. That's in a school in New York, a great institution of higher learning. But we do know that St. Bonaventure really kept the Franciscans going in a lot of ways after the death of their founder, St. Francis. And let's face it, St. Francis of Assisi was just a singular character. I mean, I don't know if there's been anybody as unique as him in the history of the church. And so after the death of a founder, sometimes the fire can kind of die out. People are asking, what do we do now? Where do we go now? And St. Bonaventure really helped to steer that Franciscan ship and keep it going and provide it with some sort of a theological direction in certain ways. And what's interesting, too, is that he embraced an argument about the origin of the universe. We've been talking about God. We've been talking about the universe a lot this week as well, especially given the amazing images that we've seen from the Webb telescope. Thanks to NASA, we talked about that and the light that it kind of sheds on the universe. Well, St. Bonaventure had a great theory. It wasn't unique to him, about the origin of the universe, a great argument that's called the Kalam cosmological argument. It's an argument about creation, essentially, and God. And no, the argument isn't, and God said, Kalam, and the universe was created. No, that's it's not like a magic word like Shazam or anything like that. It's the Kalam cosmological argument. I'll explain what that means in just a second. But just to tell you what cosmology is, you might hear this word cosmology, cosmological. It has nothing to do with cosmetic surgery, or anything like that. Cosmology has to do with the cosmos, the universe, and its origins. And so the Kalam cosmological argument is really all about that. And by the way, Kalam is an Arabic word. It's actually an Arabic word that means word. It's a word that means word or speech. And that's kind of interesting because when you look at the Psalms, when you look at what the Psalms say about creation, it's kind of a form of speech, isn't it? So let me just read to you one of my favorite Psalms, Psalm 19. I won't read the whole thing, but I just love this Psalm for so many different reasons. It's about the glory of God in not only his creation, but also in the law. The law of God reveals his glory as well. Psalm 19 starts off, "The heavens are telling the glory of God, and the firmament proclaims his handiwork. Day to day pours forth speech, and night to night declares knowledge. There is no speech, nor are there words where their voice is not heard. Yet their voice goes throughout all the earth, and their words to the end of the world. In them he has set a tent for the sun, which comes forth like a bridegroom leaving his chamber, and like a strong man runs its course with joy. Its rising is from the end of the heavens, and its circuit to the end of them, and there is nothing hidden from its heat." So that's really a few lines there in the psalm about creation and how The heavens themselves, the very creation, proclaim the glory, the handiwork of God himself. And then it goes on to talk about the law. The law of the Lord is perfect, reviving the soul. The testimony of the Lord is sure, making wise the simple. The precepts of the Lord are right, rejoicing the heart. It goes on and on and on. Some great stuff about the law of God. And then at the end, it's just a beautiful line in verse 14 of Psalm number 19. It says, "Let the words of my mouth and the meditation of my heart be acceptable in your sight, O Lord, my rock and my redeemer." That's a great, great prayer to pray. Let the words of my mouth and the meditation of my heart be acceptable in your sight, O Lord, my rock and my redeemer. But this idea that creation itself is speaking to us, is talking to us, and that takes us back to this Arabic word kalam, which means word or speech. And the kalam argument is really about creation, and it became really, really popular, this argument, with Islamic philosophers in the Middle Ages. But it really didn't catch on with Catholics, except for a couple of different people. And by the way, you might also know this too, if you look this up, if you Google this word kalam, and it's spelled K-A-L-A-M, it also refers to a type of Islamic theology and philosophy. It's called kalam. But I'm talking about this specific argument about creation, about God, about cosmology. Now, one Catholic who really did pick it up was today's saint, Saint Bonaventure. He loved using this argument. Now, Saint Thomas Aquinas, by the way, both of these guys are doctors of the church. We know, of course, about Aquinas, that he's the angelic doctor, and he's kind of the touchstone of Catholic theology in a lot of ways. And these two guys were really contemporaries. In fact, they died in the exact same year, in the 13th century. Saint Bonaventure was born in 1221, and he died in 1274. And Saint Thomas Aquinas also died in 74. He was 3 years younger. He was born in 1225. So it's kind of interesting. They went to their heavenly reward the exact same year. Now, Aquinas did not like the kalam cosmological argument. He didn't like it. He didn't like to use it. He had some critiques of it. And I must confess, I'm not enough of an expert in St. Thomas to tell you sort of the nuances of that. But he really didn't like it. But that's okay. Bonaventure used it. And just because Aquinas disagrees with you doesn't mean it's wrong or against the faith. It's clearly not, because both of these guys are doctors of the church, right? They're canonized saints. So this methodology is far from against the faith, and in fact can kind of help promote it. Now, you might not like the argument either, but I'll lay out what it is. It's actually a really kind of a simple argument, and it's been made popular. A lot of people know about this today, not because of St. Bonaventure and the fact that he liked it, but they know about it because of this Protestant apologist named William Lane Craig, Dr. William Lane Craig. Now, Craig's a brilliant guy. He's absolutely brilliant. I've actually met him in person. He's a super, super nice guy, too, very humble. That, yeah, just because somebody's a nice guy doesn't mean their arguments are all right. But I think he's got a lot of great stuff. And way back in 1979, he wrote a book about the kalam cosmological argument. He talks about it a lot. If you go on YouTube, you'll find tons of arguments and videos by Dr. William Lane Craig about this argument for creation and for God. So you can check that out. But he really makes use of it. And he's been critiqued on it, too. There's some people who think there are holes in this argument. And maybe we'll deal with a couple of them here and there. But here's the argument. It's really simple, and it's something that really anybody can use. So the argument goes like this. Point number one, premise number one, the universe exists. And I'm tempted to say the universe obviously exists. You know, we can see it because of our sense data that we get from our own senses. We know that, yes, this universe is real. The tree is real. The table is real that I'm knocking on here. Now, I know some of you might say, well, hang on here. Maybe we're all living in the matrix and we don't know it. Well, what's your evidence for that? So, okay, just grant me the benefit of the doubt, please. Just grant me this premise so we can get on with it. All right, so premise number one is that the universe obviously exists. Point number two, the universe either had a beginning or no beginning. It's possible that the universe was infinite. It was kind of always there. Never had a beginning, and it's infinite. That's possible, but the universe either had a beginning or not. Point number three, if it does have a beginning, if the universe did have a beginning, the beginning was either caused or not caused. Okay, so are you following me so far? Point number four, I'll go over this again for you. Point number four, if it was caused, the cause was either personal, it was either a personal cause or an impersonal cause, not personally caused. Okay, so that's essentially the argument. So point number one, the universe exists. Point number two, it either had a beginning or no beginning. It might have been infinite. Point number three, if it had a beginning, the beginning of the universe was either caused or not caused. And point number four, if it was caused, the cause was either a personal cause, personally caused, or not personally caused. So basically, every part of the argument gives you a bit of a dilemma, and you have to make a choice, and then you go on to the next part. So if you accept all the premises of this argument, it ends with the conclusion that the universe was caused by a personal God, was caused personally by God. So that seems to be the conclusion of this. All right, so now we could go through all the points of this argument, but we really don't have time to go through all of it in detail. But I will want to take just a closer look at point number two, because a lot of people ask about this. The universe either had a beginning or no beginning. Okay, this is really important. This is really, really important. There are a lot of people out there who say that, oh, we don't have to say that. The universe need not have a beginning point. You might argue or try to, hopefully not argue in a bad way. When we talk about arguing, we don't mean yelling and screaming and pointing fingers and losing our cool. We mean making our case, and not very many people know how to do that in today's day and age in a very civilized manner, unfortunately. But if you're making your argument about the Catholic faith, a lot of people say, well, hang on here. You guys say that God is a powerful creator. God is, in fact, all-powerful. But we don't need to say that. We don't need to say that the universe has a beginning point. We don't need to say that the universe has a first cause. A lot of people will advocate an infinite number of causes going back and back and back and back through history and with no end in sight. And it's true that, you know, theoretically, infinity can go in both directions, right? Towards the future, world without end, and also towards the past, right? Just think about mathematics. Again, we talked a lot about math and faith yesterday. Think about, you know, of course, there's zero, there's plus one, plus two, plus three. And then there's, of course, on the other side of zero, minus one, minus two, minus three, and on and on and on. It can go in the other direction. So theoretically, they say, why can't the universe be like that? Why can't it be like that? Why can't it be infinite? Well, here's the deal. Here's the deal. And William Lane Craig and a lot of other scholars point this out too. There's no such thing as an infinite number of causes, right? Because we know that we live in the universe just by observation of cause and effect. You know, where do kids come from, right? And, you know, the causes and effects. The tides, the wind blows over a tree, cause and effect. And we can go back through time to, you know, the causes of all things that have ever happened in history. We go back, and some people say there's an infinite number of causes going back to the past in the universe. But there's no such thing. There's no such thing as an infinite number of causes. In fact, there's no such thing as an infinite number of anything. So here's an illustration. I like to use this one because it's really, really simple. It's really simple. It's not original to me. And other people try to make the same point using different examples, but I think this one is really tight because it's really simple. Imagine, if you will, there's a library, and in this library, there's an infinite number of black books and an infinite number of red books. Okay, so there's an infinite number of both. Now, if somebody goes into that library and they sign out one of the red books, now, if it's true that there really are infinite numbers of anything, if there's an infinite number of red books, an infinite number of black books, if somebody signs a red book out of the library, if they're both infinite, there would still be just as many red books as black books on the shelves, since there's an infinite number of each. But we know that that's not the case. That's not the case in actuality, because one has been taken out. So there can't be, to talk about the universe here, there can't be an infinite number of causes stretching back through history. There has to be a first cause at the beginning, a first cause to the universe, an unmoved mover, if you will, a first cause. Aquinas would talk about that, and that we would call God. And so that's basically the argument here. And let me just I'll say this too about this argument. There is a conclusion to this. William Lane Craig and others who use this Kalam cosmological argument, they do argue that the universe has a beginning, but since everything that has a beginning needs a cause, the universe needs a cause that's outside of the universe. And such a cause would have to have the following features. Number one, it has to be outside of space and time because it caused space and time, this first cause. It has to be changeless because it's timeless. It's outside of time. It has to be immaterial, not material, because it is spaceless. In fact, it created space. It has to be uncaused because nothing could have been before it, if you will. There's nothing behind God, all right? It's obviously incredibly powerful because whatever it is caused the entire universe to spring into being. And it has to be personal. Why? Because, look, an explanation, some people say an explanation is either scientific, if you will, or personal. But the cause of the universe has to be beyond science. It has to be beyond space-time, observable space-time. And there's certain things that do, I don't want to get too deep into the woods here, but there are certain things that do transcend space and time. Think about, we talked about numbers before, right? Like -1, -2, -3. Okay, there are abstract things that we can think of, like numbers. The other thing, another thing that transcends space and time are minds, okay? Minds, like your mind, your soul, if you will. God, right? The mind of God. Think about this. So there had to have been an incredible mind behind all of this as well. So at the end of the day, the argument ends with not only a God creating the universe, but a personal, intelligent creator of the universe. And so that is the Kalam cosmological argument. And another reason why it's become popular these days, not just because of William Lane Craig and his work, but also because of the Big Bang theory, not the sitcom, but of course, the Big Bang theory of cosmology. And that was, of course, started by, and I think almost everybody, most secular people believe in this too, Father Georges Lemaître created the Big Bang theory. He was the first proponent of it. And science has looked into it. And this is really what the Webb telescope was trying to find for us on the fringes of the universe and get out there, the farthest flung particles and stars and everything from the Big Bang, emanating from the Big Bang. And so it's got a couple things going for it here, because both the Big Bang theory and the Kalam cosmological argument about where the universe came from, both arguments say that the universe has, in fact, a beginning. So that's just a short little rundown about St. Bonaventure, one of his favorite theological arguments, the Kalam cosmological argument about the universe and the fact that it has a creator. So, hey, take it for what it's worth. Some people think it's incomplete. Some people critique it. And some of those critiques may be valid. Some of them may not be. But I think it's a fairly solid argument. Maybe you disagree with me. Maybe you want to argue with me. I don't know. The number is 888-914-9149. So hopefully you can remember that. And speaking of remembering, a lot of us seem to be losing our memory these days, especially as we get older. I don't know if you've experienced this. Sometimes it's just misplacing your car keys or forgetting where you parked the car. That's pretty common. But other stuff is a little bit more troubling. And I'm going to be sharing with you after the break how you can hold on to your memory, how you can keep it from fading away. And these are expert tips from somebody who knows what they're talking about, a real, honest-to-goodness neurologist. We'll have it for you on the Cale Clark Show after this break. It's Friday, July the 15th, 888-914-9149. Be right back. Hi, this is Cale Clark. Thanks for listening to my podcast. Check out Charity Mobile and prayerfully consider making them your wireless carrier. They're a pro-life phone company, and 5% of your monthly plan price goes to Relevant Radio or another pro-life charity of your choice. For a limited time, new customers who mention offer code Relevant Radio get a free phone with free activation and free shipping. Don't delay. CharityMobile.com. That's CharityMobile.com.
maintaining the Catholic faith and how you can live it and share it too. It's the Cale Clark Show. Have a question? Give Cale a call at 888-914-9149.
Hey, you know what the best insurance is? Staying in a state of grace. We call that fire insurance, folks. Actually, when I was growing up, there was like a classic rock station that I used to listen to late at night, and they used to play Christian heavy metal. There was sort of an hour where they would just do this, and the program was called The Fire Escape. So anyways, I know producer Jim has been itching to play some Metallica on the show, but I've been pulling him back. I've been trying to, he's like a wild bronco that just wants to, listen, I don't know. Maybe we should. I don't know. Maybe we should use a Metallica rejoin.
I don't think we can use that. It's good workout music.
Well, we'll ride the lightning here. All right. Well, we're back on the program now. 888-914-9149. We were talking before the break about the Kalam cosmological argument about the origins of the universe. I find it fascinating. Today's Saint Bonaventure, he was big into this. Aquinas was like, I don't like it, but Bonaventure loved it. And maybe you liked it too. Anyways, let's go to the phones right now. Tom is calling from Cross Lake, Minnesota. Hi, Tom.
Hey, Cale. Thanks for taking my call.
You got it. Go ahead.
So I'm fascinated with your topic. You have great topics, as always. But, you know, one of the things I would comment on is I think the reason it's difficult for humans to have the concept of infinity, especially, I mean, we understand this forward-looking infinity. We seem to understand it. But as you brought up, thinking of it as in reverse, in the negative direction. But also, you have to understand that even when you go from zero to one, there's infinite infinity in between that, right? What's half of that? 0.5. What's half of that? 0.25.
You can just keep
dividing, right? So, you know, because we experience time, we experience linear time. Mm-hmm. But time isn't really real. It's only a product of density. And we know that. I mean, we can measure that. So, you know, God is outside of time. So this idea of the multibang, you know, works really well because time is only a construct of the mass of the Earth, right? Which kind of bends the way the energy works. And we understand this in physics. In fact, Einstein, right, E=mc² is kind of fundamental, but we can measure it. You know, an atomic clock at sea level versus an atomic clock at the top of Mount Everest versus an atomic clock up at the space station. Time, you know, 1 second is not the same as 1 second. They're always making adjustments. Satellites are always having to make density equivalent time adjustments. So it's measurable. Astronauts experience time differently just because they're further from the mass. So, you know, the closer you are to the mass of the density, then time changes. So if you take time out of the equation of infinity, infinity is really easy to understand.
Well, hey, you are exploding my brain, Tom, I'll tell you. So that's an intriguing thought. Well, thank you so much for calling in, Tom. Thanks for your kind words. And yeah, this idea that time is experienced differently in outer space. Wow. It kind of reminds me of Superman, the movie. Remember that when, you know, I don't want to blow the movie, but, you know, something happens to Lois and Superman flies around the Earth. And he actually spins it backwards. He rewinds time, if you will. Wow. It's always been a cool thought. But anyways, I digress. Let's go back to the phone now. Thank you so much for that, Tom. Let's go to Dang, who's calling from Central California. Hello.
Yes. Hi, Cale. My kids always ask, you know, how do you know if God is real? And I tell them, you know, God made the world and made the universe. And then they inevitably ask, well, who made God? And you say, well, nobody made God. He's always been there. And so right now they believe that, but it's really hard for them to understand that, you know, there's a being outside of, you know, space and time. But in the last segment when you started talking about Dr. William Lane Craig and his argument for the existence of God, and then you explained the universe and how it came into being, you concluded that was St. Bonaventure's theory. And so I was wondering if that was also Dr. Craig's theory, or do they have the same, you know, perspective, or if there's a difference between the two arguments between Dr. Lane Craig, William Lane Craig, and St. Bonaventure.
Well, thanks for that call. I appreciate that. And just to clarify, yeah, in case anybody missed it, that the today's saint is St. Bonaventure, and he was really fond of this Kalam cosmological argument for the existence of God. And it's also been popularized in more modern times by William Lane Craig, who's a Protestant apologist. And there's nothing specifically Protestant about the argument. Catholics can use it too. Obviously, Bonaventure used it, but it was actually originally kind of got going in medieval times. A lot of Muslim philosophers used this argument. Now, I'm not sure who was the first to propose this argument. That I can't answer that question. But again, the argument's pretty simple. It just says the universe exists. It either had a beginning or no beginning. If it did have a beginning, it was either caused or not caused. And if it was caused, it was either a personal cause or an impersonal cause. And the argument concludes with that the universe is caused by a personal God. So again, like for a fuller explanation, you might want to check out some videos by Craig and other people who talk about it as well. And some people, again, like they're not super fond of it. I remember Jimmy Akin wrote an article a couple years ago back in 2020 for Catholic Answers, sort of saying, you know, use it with caution because not everybody loved it, including Thomas Aquinas. And he gave some reasons why. One of the reasons, and he talked a little bit about the Big Bang Theory as well. And even from a scientific perspective, that argument really coheres well with the Kalam argument for the beginning of the universe. But as Akin pointed out, that's based on the science that we know now, and that is the best theory given what we know now. But more evidence might come to light in the future. We might get some fine-tuning, a little pun there, people talk about the fine-tuning of the universe. We might get some fine-tuning of that theory, too, as we find out more and more about the universe. So Aquinas maybe went through another door to get back to the same point that God created all things. But yeah, so I would recommend checking that out. But yes, you're right. It is the same argument. It is the same argument. So thanks so much for calling in. That was Dang in Central California calling in. And you can call in too, 888-914-9149. It's Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. Well, I did promise before the break from one science to another, neurology. That can give us some tips on how to protect our memory so we can remember all these different arguments. And there's a new book that's come out by a renowned expert on the brain that says there's a few simple things that we can do all the time to prevent our memory from declining as we age. And it happens to the best of us. I mean, I don't know if you guys remember the game Trivial Pursuit. Of course you do. Who couldn't? It was if you're a millennial, maybe you don't, but this was all the rage back in the 1980s. And when I was a kid growing up, I used to love playing Trivial Pursuit, and I almost had like a photographic memory for these arcane facts and figures and things like that. And I was really good at it. But today, I would say my memory isn't as good as it used to be. So I'm curious about this, and maybe you are too. And there's an article that was just published a couple days ago in the New York Times by Hope Reese. And she was kind of reviewing the work of this neuroscientist whose name is Dr. Richard Restack. And he's at George Washington Hospital, University School of Medicine and Health. And so one of the things that he says in a new book, which is called The Complete Guide to Memory, The Science of Strengthening Your Mind, Dr. Restack talks about really what he's gained from decades of experience working with people on their memory. And he's actually written 20 books on the mind. So he talks about mental exercises you can use, just simple things you can do every day, everything from your diet to your sleep that can help boost your memory. And memory is really important for functioning every day, not just recall, but it's connected to creative thinking. It's impacted in a lot of ways by technology. The tech that we use every day can impact our memory, and it's not always for the good. And who we are is really shaped by our memory, our identity. And we remember, okay, I was born here, here are my parents. And if you forget your life, if you have amnesia, you don't know who you are. And so this is a part of, a much smaller scale. This is kind of the everyday problem of life, that memory slips away a little bit. Also, In some ways, memory is tied to your intelligence. And the reason why is because there's this kind of memory called working memory. And so there's short-term memory where we kind of remember these things that are rate, you know, in our short-term banks, like where did I park the car 5 minutes ago, that sort of thing. But you're not going to remember that 20 years from now. There's also long-term memory, stuff that you have to reach back to. But there's something called working memory, which is kind of in the middle. And that's what's really tied into your intelligence, according to Dr. Restak. And he says it's actually the most critical kind of memory because it's tied into your concentration and what you can actually achieve in life. So it's really crucial to work on exercises that can help you with your working memory, but also the other ones as well. Short-term memory and long-term memory, too. You're listening to The Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio, 888-914-9149. And apparently in this new book, which is called The Complete Guide to Memory, Dr. Richard Restak, he talks about different things that you can do to improve your memory. He says it's not inevitable that your memory is going to decline with aging. Now, maybe you know somebody who's older, maybe they're a senior, maybe they're even in their 80s or 90s, who are still incredibly sharp. And I've met a couple people like this in my life who were able to recall things from the distant past, who are very, very, you know, whip smart, even at that advanced age. And there's some things that you can do to maybe help your chances of becoming like that as well. I remember one theory that a professor of mine had was that if you learn a lot of languages, he was a Bible scholar, and he talked about a lot of older scholars that he knew that their minds were still sharp, their memories were still sharp, even as their bodies aged. And he attributed a lot of that to language learning, like learning the scriptures in Greek and doing your daily New Testament reading in Greek or your Old Testament reading in Hebrew, or just knowing different languages. Because whenever you learn a language, it activates a different part of your brain and different synapses are firing and different connections are being made when you're learning something new. And I think that's true, not just of languages, but of a lot of other subjects as well. Whenever we learn something new or try something a little bit different, it kind of jolts our brain a little bit into making these new connections. And so that's one thing. But in the book, and this guy's a real expert, so maybe we should listen to him, Dr. Restak, he talks about 10 sins or stumbling blocks that can lead to lost memories or distorted memories. And seven of these deadly sins, if you will, were described by one scholar as sins of omission. And we're talking about things like absent-mindedness. Oh, I forgot. There's also sins of commission, distorted memories. You remember something, but that's not the way it actually happened. And Dr. Restak also sort of added some of his own as well. Technological distortion, technological distraction, and depression. So those things can hurt your memory as well. So here are some of his top tips, according to the New York Times, for developing and maintaining a healthy memory. So you might want to grab a, so you don't forget. You might want to write this down maybe on your smartphone, but we'll see. Maybe the smartphones aren't so hot for helping our memory, or maybe just a good old-fashioned pad and paper. So tip number one, pay more attention. Pay more attention. Just pay attention. You won't forget stuff. It sounds like something my dad would say to me, and rightly so. Apparently, some memory lapses that we have are actually, they have nothing to do with your memory, but they have everything to do with your attention. You're not paying attention. So the example that's given here is, imagine if you're at a cocktail party, you're meeting a lot of people. You look like James Bond, you're wearing your tuxedo, and somebody catches your eye across the room and you're not really paying attention to the person who's introducing themselves to you. Now, or maybe you're talking to a whole bunch of people at once, it's a group conversation, and you didn't pay attention when you heard someone's name. So you forgot it. And so he says, Dr. Richard Restak says, inattention is the biggest cause for memory difficulties. It means that you didn't properly encode the memory. You didn't encode it. So when you pay attention to stuff, it helps your brain to kind of hardwire it, encode it. So one way to do that, one way to encode that new information, like somebody's name that you've never met before, is to visualize the word. It's kind of like using a mnemonic device, as it were. So you can have sort of a mental picture associated with that word. For example, he gives the example of he recently met a new doctor, and the doctor's name was Dr. King. Now, obviously, this is a no-brainer. You don't have to be Einstein to figure this one out, what you can do. So he just thought of, he formed this mental image in his mind of a guy in a white lab coat with a crown on his head and a scepter in his hand instead of a stethoscope. So that's Dr. King. All right. That was an easy one. But you can maybe do that. Maybe you might have to get a little bit creative with some names of other people that you meet. So you got to encode the memory, and part of that is just simply paying attention. Tip number two, find regular, everyday memory challenges. How you can keep your memory from slipping away as you get older, challenge it, make a game out of it. And Dr. Restak says there's a lot of different exercises that you can integrate into everyday life, and it doesn't really take too much time out of your day. It just doing the same stuff, but just a little bit differently. And here's one example. Going to the grocery store, instead of writing down a grocery list on a piece of paper, well, maybe do that as well, or on an app, maybe you have a shopping app that you use or a list that you make on your phone. He said, look, try to memorize that list. When you go into the store, don't automatically pull out that list. Instead, try to pick up everything that was on your list according to your memory. Try to do that. Try to see the items in your mind. See that gallon of milk. See that loaf of bread, whatever the case may be. And only look at the list at the end. Now, if you're not going to the store, he says, try memorizing a recipe. Maybe you're having your groceries delivered. I don't know. But try to memorize a recipe. Now, that could turn out to be a disaster. Oh, man. Don't do that. But he said, actually, frequent cooking is a good way to improve working memory. That's interesting, too, because I'm no cook and my wife is listening, so I can't even fib about this. There's no way I could. She'll call in and give me a lot of problems about this. But the one or two times I have cooked, I found it really like I really had to work hard. My brain, I was like, OK, I got to get this. I got to put this in now and get the oregano or whatever the case may be. I found it a mental stress. I'm a simple guy. What can I say? But anyways, that's a memory challenge. Just frequent cooking, apparently. Here's another one. Get in your car and don't use Google Maps. Don't use your GPS. Try to navigate from memory to get to where you're going. Now, if you're in an unfamiliar city, that might not be a cool idea. You might end up where you don't want to be. But there was a study that was done in 2020. It was a very small study. But apparently people who use GPS or map apps, if you will, a lot over time, they actually show a steeper and steeper decline in their brain health and in their spatial memory 3 years later. So, and everybody does this, right? I mean, most cars don't even come with navigation anymore because they know everybody's using Google Maps and or whatever. Maybe they use a competitor's feature, whatever. But Google Maps is kind of the gold standard still. And I don't think there's any argument about that, really, but we become dependent on these things that we don't have to use our memory. He also says play games. That's another tip. That's interesting. Tip number three is play games. Games like chess, games like bridge, maybe some other card games. They're good for memory. And he says one of his favorite games, Dr. Restak says, one of his favorite working memory games, and remember that working memory is the memory that's kind of in between your short-term and your long-term, but it's really tied into your intelligence and what you can do and what you can achieve. A good way to improve your working memory is to play 20 questions. And think of, you know, if you're with another person or you could do this in a group, think of a person, think of a place, think of an object, and the other person has to ask 20 questions. And it's a yes or no answer type of situation. In order to succeed at that game, when you're asking the questions, you're trying to figure out what it is. You've got to remember all the other questions that you asked before this in order to guess the right answer. So that's a game. Here's another game. Take a pen and take a piece of paper and try to list back all of the U.S. presidents, starting with the current president of the United States. Some people argue about who that is, but I'm not going to get into that. And go all the way back to Roosevelt, or maybe even further back in time, and then do it in reverse. Or you might want to try naming only the Democratic presidents or naming only the Republican ones and name them in alphabetical order, like things like that. Now, who would you actually go to the trouble of playing such a game? I don't know. But you could do this if you're a sports fan. My producer, Jim, is a huge St. Louis Cardinals fan. He could try to recall all the managers of the Cardinals over the past 100 years or something. I don't know. There's a lot of ways that you can do this. You can use that with celebrities or anything that you're interested in, books of the Bible. Try to engage your working memory. Read more novels. Apparently, one of the first things that go when you're losing your memory is people tend to give up on fiction. Now, I'm not a big fiction reader. I like watching movies and stuff, but apparently when people have memory difficulties, they tend to switch to reading nonfiction, which I didn't really know. And then the last thing is beware of technology. Don't rely so much on your phone, because if something's in your phone and you don't know it, but you know it's in your phone, it means that you really don't know it. So you can't remember when we used to remember people's phone numbers when we were kids, you know, what's your number? I'll call you. We'll hang out at school, play basketball, whatever. We don't do that anymore. So we've lost that ability. And so there you go. There you go. So just a couple of quick tips there. And if you think you are concerned about that, if you're forgetting really, really big important items, not just where you parked your car, you might want to talk to a doctor about that, because there might be something serious going on. So anyways, for what it's worth, check it out. It's a new book from memory expert who's written 20 books on the brain, and his name is Dr. Richard Restak. I almost forgot that, so maybe I need to read his book. It's called The Complete Guide to Memory, The Science of Strengthening Your Mind. We'll be right back with your phone calls and much more in our last segment, 888-914-9149. Be right back on The Cale Clark Show.
Explaining the faith so you can explain it to others. It's The Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
Hey, welcome back for our final segment of the week on The Cale Clark Show. You can call in if you want to react to anything you've heard today on the show. 888-914-9149 is the number to call. We talked about the Kalam cosmological argument that argues that the universe has a beginning, and that beginning was kicked off by a powerful creator God, a personal God. And we also talked about how to prevent yourself from losing your memory. I mean, it happens to the best of us as we age, but there's some things that we can do to slow that process down and stay sharp. And believe it or not, I got a message from Lucas Holt, our old friend Lucas Holt, who used to produce this show on Relevant Radio. He's still listening. He's still listening. So thanks for that, Lucas. And one of the tips that a memory scientist, Dr. Richard Rusak, mentions in his new book on this is that you should try to drive without using GPS or Google Maps, just to try to, you know, navigate your own way through the streets. And Lucas said to me, I try not to use GPS sometimes to give myself this navigation skill, but my wife doesn't like it as much when I do that. LOL. To her credit, I do get lost sometimes. So yes, and there's that classic, of course, stereotype of the guy who just does not want to look at the map because, hey, we know where we're going, right? And I don't know. Google Maps is kind of, let's just use Google Maps. I don't think anybody really does that anymore. Does anybody really do that anymore? Say, you know, no, we're not using the map. I don't know of anyone. But anyways, let's go back to the phones right now. Bill is calling from Park Ridge, Illinois, very close to the headquarters of Relevant Radio. Hi, Bill.
Yes, hello. I was just wanted to say that, you know, I'm surprised as a Catholic station that you would even consider pondering the idea of that, you know, Big Bang Theory, you know, the absurdity of that, you know, being, go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, why would you be surprised that a Catholic station might mention this?
Well, I'm Orthodox. We, you know, of course we were once, you know, the same, and we broke apart, but I'm just surprised that you would even, you know, ponder the idea that, instead of creation, you know, a ball of gas, you know, the Big Bang Theory, a ball of gas somehow created a human. I mean, how do you explain the anatomy of a man compared to a woman? Who that had been created, you know, a ball of gas that had created a man's organ and then, you know, breasts on a woman and her, you know, she's completely different physically. So how do you explain that? So, I mean, where does this Big Bang come in? And, you know, it makes no sense.
Okay, well, let me just... basically, here's what I would say about this. There are a lot of people, Bill, that think that there's a conflict between science and faith. And the Big Bang Theory is a theory about cosmology, about the origins of the universe. And a lot of people think that there's a conflict between church teaching and science. That's simply not the case. It's possible that maybe in the future someone will come up with a better theory, and scientists will say, well, we thought the Big Bang was it, but it's actually more this, or maybe we need to tweak this a little bit. But science simply describes how things work in God's creation. You know, how is it that photosynthesis works? How is it that a baby grows within his or her mother's womb? How does the human eye function? That's just how things work in God's creation. There's really two books, right? The book of creation and the book of God's word, right? That speaks to us in different ways. And so science sort of gives us the how, but faith gives us the why and the who. And that's one of the things we talked about earlier this week on the program. So there's no conflict. It's looking at the same thing from a different angle. And so faith gives us this question of why we're here. We're created in the image and likeness of God. We're created to be with him for all eternity because of Christ, you know, stepping into creation with the incarnation. He's able to communicate with us in a unique way about who he is, who God is, and what our destiny is in him. So I don't see any conflict at all. And don't forget that the Big Bang Theory was created by a Catholic priest, Father George Lemaître. He obviously saw no conflict between that and his faith, and many of the great scientific discoveries in history have been made by Catholic scientists and Catholic scholars, Catholic priests. So many craters on the moon are named after Catholic priests who were priest scientists who discovered them. And so I don't see it as being a problem at all. In fact, in a lot of ways, I think it can help us to explain and defend the faith. So I don't know. Does anybody agree or disagree with that? 888-914-9149 is the number to call. Let's go now to Steve in Chester, Pennsylvania. Hi, Steve.
Hello, Kyle. There was a very important mathematical physical theory proved in 2003 by three very prominent mathematical physicists, Arvin Borda, Alan Guth, which some of you may have heard of. Alan Guth is very, very prominent in inflationary theory in the very, very early universe, and Alexander Vilenkin. Well, all three of these collaborated, and they have been collaborating to try to produce a theorem along this line, but in 2003, they proved in mathematics and physics that this universe absolutely had to have had an absolute beginning. There's no question about it. And they even went so far as to make their theorem not susceptible to previous arguments trying to overthrow the Big Bang Theory. There have been, as you might imagine, several attempts out there to overthrow the Big Bang Theorem, or rather theory, because it implies that there may be a God. And as we know, a lot of people are very opposed to the idea of there being a creator God. So there have been some very, very brilliant, minds who have tried to overthrow this theory of a creator God and a universe with a beginning. Well, it was proven in 2003 by Borda, Guth, and Vilenkin that in mathematics and physics, on paper, that there was a there absolutely was, and the proof seems to be rather. I mean, maybe someday somebody will be some great scientist will see a flaw in their argument and overthrow it, but that doesn't seem to be the case right now. And it's been around for 20 years. It's been around 20 years thus far, and it's not been overthrown yet.
That's interesting. Yeah, I think a lot of people, I mean, not being a specialist in the field myself by any stretch of the imagination, a lot of people who aren't familiar with that discipline might not have heard of this argument and what these guys have shown. And it's so intriguing that I just feel like God certainly has left his footprints in creation in more ways than one, certainly in the incarnation of Christ, where he actually did leave his footprints in creation. But the nature of the evidence for his existence, I mean, it's certainly more than plausible with what he's left for us, but it's not, he doesn't usually overwhelm us. Now, sometimes he does reveal himself to certain people throughout history. The example that comes to mind right away is the Apostle Paul. I mean, who was actively opposing the church, who was actively opposing the spread of the faith. And he was a theist too. Obviously, he was doing it out of zeal for God. He thought he was defending God by trying to stamp out a belief in Jesus as Messiah. But of course, Christ revealed himself to Paul on the road to Damascus, completely did a 180, changed his life. And in a sense, the choice was taken away from Paul. He couldn't deny the reality of who Christ was at that point. But most of the time, God does leave us kind of an out. He gives us enough evidence to take the next step. For those of us whose hearts are open, it's there. Whose minds are open, it's there. But he's never going to force anyone to believe, usually. Now, I guess with Paul, it was a little bit different. He had picked him for a special mission. But I always find that intriguing. And Jesus was like that, too. He always said, hey, if you have ears to hear and eyes to see, you'll kind of get it. If your heart's open to it, if you're closed off, if you're bound and determined to go your own way. And let's face it, a lot of the reasons why people don't believe, it's not because of a lack of evidence for belief. It's because they don't want to change their life. It's a moral question more so than a theological question, a philosophical question, or a scientific question. But there are, of course, very sincere seekers who honestly don't see it. And that's our job, to kind of help figure out what their questions are and help them on the path, take that next step towards faith in Christ. Thank you very much for that call, Steve, and Bill as well in this segment. Thanks for listening, everybody, this week to the Cale Clark Show. Jim Shaper produced. And today, Thomas took your calls. And don't be a doubting Thomas, right? Be back next week. Take it away, Michaela.
Thank you for listening to my daddy.